You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Okay, kiddo, I was too lazy to cook tonight, so I got Chinese takeout, and it was pretty good.
You know, it was okay. It's
it was good. It was good.
I'm sorry. It's a little bit lacking in this part of Texas. Good right. Chinese food is a little bit lacking.
Okay.
But so, anyway.
So hey. Let's talk China.
Let's talk China.
Speaking that's of a, Chinese food, let's talk China.
Good lead in there. Yeah, you know, so tonight, when you and I talk, it's kind of a political potpourri, Ron, because there's so much going on in the world, and there's so many things I just want to get your take on. So here we go. China, well, President Trump has been, you know, holding out to much criticism by his detractors. And we hear that he has come to some sort of an agreement with China. And we're all not sure what that is, but it does involve intellectual property, which is important. It does involve food buying from our farmers, which is huge. I think it was $50 to $60 billion.
Yeah, you know, we went from about $15 billion in agricultural products that the Chinese have bought from us. Now we're going to bounce up to about $50 billion. That's absolutely huge. You know, and I just want to say something about the Chinese-United States trade agreements and all these heavy-duty negotiations. And really, you're the family expert on China and trade because you do so much business internationally, and especially you do business with China. But, you know, I mean, taking it down to how does this affect us, I really understand that the agricultural industry, in other words, the farmers, the ranchers, have been, you know, hurting. And I truly understand this. I'll give you a great example. My folks were ranchers in California, and they ranched almonds. So it's almonds if you grow them and almonds if you eat them. I don't know if you know that.
I do know that, but I still like the word almonds.
Okay.
I don't like the word almonds.
But here's my point. Now, they sold to Foster Farms and they sold to Blue Diamond, but one of their biggest clients was really the Chinese, because when the Chinese have all their various holidays and they do, you know, the Tet and all, I mean,
yeah,
all of this Vietnamese,
of
Asians, they have all of these
Chinese
holidays.
New Year is a month long.
Almonds are a big deal in all of their cooking and preparations and desserts and all these things they do. So I totally get it that, you know, sometimes ranchers that did what my folks did might hurt a little bit. But, you know, I want to hear your take on it, because I tell you what, Linda, you've really been the prophet with regards to telling people to hang on, because this is going to end up a much better deal for Americans and farmers and ranchers and manufacturing and everything. So I thought you'd just kind of share some of your insight.
Well, I don't know what the total deal is just yet, so I can't say a lot. But what I can say is that it is absolutely historic that the Chinese came to the White House and spoke with President Trump, and they've been in meetings for a couple of days, and that they walked away with a phase one of an agreement, which, you know, sounds like it's in the U.S. favor, but I don't know if it is or not, because I don't know what the U.S. is giving up here. But what I do know is that one thing that the U.S. is saying is that they are not going to charge the 30% tariffs. Right now, I think we're 25%. So we're not going to charge the 30% tariffs, which were due to go into effect. So he's pulling back on that. And listen, at the end of the day, China needs to make a deal with us, because we are hurting them with these tariffs. And they like to save face. Saving face is huge in China. It's a huge thing. And they want to save face, but this is hurting them a lot, much more than it's hurting us.
Well, you know, one of the things that I heard, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard statistics that said that, you know, 80% of China's business internationally comes from the United States, but the other side of it is only 10% of the United States business comes from China. So it's really sort of an 8-to-1 thing against the Chinese. You know, how'd you like to lose a market of 80% of your total, you know, GDP? I think it would seriously hurt. But the one thing that you said, and I'd like you to elaborate on it, is it's a market. So, you know, products are a market. And if one market becomes too expensive, i.e. with tariffs to China, then people in the United States, manufacturers, people that do what you do for a living, right, brokers and things like that, are going to search internationally for a better market. Could you sort of explain that?
Well, and I think that what has happened here has really hurt China a lot. And I think that this is ultimately what scared them. Is when they think that they can just wait it out, and what they found was that the markets like us in the United States started searching out other marketplaces to buy the same things from. So an example would be that I would buy shopping bags, paper bags for restaurants and resorts. I would buy them through China. Well, when it became prohibitive for me to do so, I started looking in Vietnam, and I started looking in South Korea, and I started looking in other places and found that I could get them at very competitive prices so that when you added the tariff in that was coming from China, and their long deliveries, by the way, because they're very long deliveries.
Because they have to go across the ocean
container the other
ships,
places.
Right? They're not going on airplanes, they're going in containers,
they
right?
can go on airplanes. You can absolutely get airplaned in, but it costs more. So... But what we'd find is, you know, we would wait 8, 12, 15 weeks from China, and maybe I could get it from Vietnam in a much shorter time frame, which as a business person is important to me. If that price from Vietnam or South Korea is as competitive or nearly as competitive when you add in the tariff, and the delivery time is way less, that's where I'm going. Well, what happened was you multiply that by all kinds of products, car products, just every product you can think of, paper, cotton, all kinds of different things, then this really began to hurt China. Because what happens is, even if China comes back and makes a deal, they've lost that business.
Yeah, and they can't get it back.
They're going to have to fight. Right. They're going to have to fight to get it back. Now it's going to be a price war. And I think it ended up being what Trump did, I think, was excellent for all of us, because in the long run, it's going to bring everybody's prices down. In the short term, it brought prices up. It's going to bring them down. And I do think that what he did, the stand he took, was so important for America because of the intellectual theft of our information that they had going
on. And our technology.
Our technology. It's huge. So I think that what he did, people really, really need to understand that he did a good thing. And I know a lot of people, they don't understand it, or B, they're impacted by the tariffs. I'm impacted by the tariffs. Guess what? It's not affecting us in any way. Does it affect the farmers? Yes, I understand that. But, you know, President Trump helped them in the interim, and now he's going to give them a windfall, I hope. So we still have some time to see what happens with this. But they're talking. They came to the table. That is such a good sign.
You know, I liked the way you put it the first time that you explained this to me, because obviously this is not in my wheelhouse, and it's not in the wheelhouse of probably 98% of all Americans. But you said something that I thought was very important, and that is we're going to put up, if we can put up with short-term pain, we'll end up with a long-term gain.
Well, you know, it's like when you go on a diet, right?
Oh, yeah.
You hate being on a diet. You hate it. And it's painful, right? Because you've got to change your lifestyle and you've got to not have all the things that you like.
And your stomach's growling and you can't eat the food you wanted to eat.
But the prize at the end is really worth it. And that's kind of what we're doing here.
And I think that's a great analogy. So what's your prognosis for the future? And I know a lot of times these deals, especially when you're dealing with people from Asia and you're dealing with people from the Middle East, they're not always that great on their word. You know, they kind of go sideways, you know, give us some hope, and then they kind of go sideways. You know, based on your business experience over the years, I mean, what do you think How do you think we're going to make out?
Well,
here?
I can't judge what's going to happen, but I think that China has to come to the table because their country is hurting. And, you know, because they've been currency manipulating for some time, then I think that what they portrayed that they did and what they portrayed that they make or made was not so true, and it really came back to bite them. I think that we need to make this deal. Both countries need to make this deal. And the other deal that we absolutely need our do-nothing Congress to sign is the Mexico-Canada.
Oh, the Mexico-Canada agreement.
That has absolutely. To get signed.
I am absolutely amazed that that has not been signed yet. Because it's such a good deal.
They're too busy trying to impeach the president.
You know, it's such a good deal for all parties involved. It's a great deal for the United States. We were in Mexico a few months ago talking with our Mexican friends, and a couple of them are business owners. They were straight on board with how good this new agreement is. I know the Canadians are going to profit and benefit from this as well.
Everybody will.
And you know what? It just perturbs me that the do-nothing Congress is hurting the American people, as well as our allies, our neighbors, the Mexicans and the Canadians, just to make this president look bad. It just bothers me. I mean, the whole thing.
I'm ashamed of us.
Well, I am too. And I know we're going to have several, you know, topics of discussion tonight in your potpourri, but that's really one of them. You know, one thing I wanted to bring up about China, and I'm glad you brought up currency manipulation, because that's been huge between China and the United States and the disparity, economic disparity. But the other thing is that the Chinese took all that technology that they stole from us and built up their military.
Yes.
But they spent, I'll bet you they spent $1 trillion or more building up their military, which includes the Navy, a big, huge naval buildup. And I know they just did I think I saw on television, they did a giant parade with all this military hardware and hundreds of thousands of soldiers, you know, marching in the parade. But you know what? That all costs money, and it puts them in debt, okay? And so when you got this trade issue and the tariff that Trump was going to put on these guys, I'm telling you, it hurts them. And I heard that the Chinese banks were really hurting too.
Yes. Yeah, they were hurting as well. So, you know, I think that we'll just have to see what happens, and we can talk about it again. And, you know, if there's any way that people would write their congresspeople and get this Mexico-Canada, United States deal done, that is really important to all of us.
And you know, I want to say something about that, because a lot of people don't do what you just suggested. They don't write their congresspeople. They don't call their offices. They don't do communication with them. And those people, meaning the Congress and the senators and things like that, they do pay attention to that. They really do. Here's what politicians pay attention to. A lot of calls, bad polling, especially bad polling. But anyway, I want to switch it up. I want to still stay on politics, but I want to talk about the newest controversy, and that's this...
Another one.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, every 10 never, minutes.
The unending, never-ending story.
You, but I just wanted to get your take on this former United States ambassador to the Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, and who claims that she was basically politically fired. Okay, so in other words, without cause, politically fired, and she gave some... testimony very recently
right.
with one of these congressional subcommittees, and I just wanted to get your take on that a little bit.
Well,
it was
another big nothing burger.
Exactly.
Because she has nothing to say that adds input to anything. So we're still with this whole thing where the Democrats are trying to go fishing and go hunting and find anything that they can against Trump. So they're just doing, they've got subpoenas going in so many directions, it crosses your eyes. So they call her in because, you know, she's a disgruntled employee,
Former employee. Now, by way of history, mm-hmm. background, she was an Obama
yes.
appointee. So she served under the Obama administration and was present in the ambassadorship when Trump came in and took
office. Yeah, and Trump should have gotten rid of everybody, but we've talked about that
and
before.
And she was asked to resign in 2018.
Because she did not support the president, she did not support his policies, she badmouthed him, and she was not, you know, in his camp. So, yes, he asked her to resign.
Well, it was more than that, too. And I think people need to see behind the veil and the smokescreen that's put up by Adam Schiff and some of these people. Because the whole deal right now, the controversy, and it's swaying both sides, right? It's also hitting Joe Biden a lot,
right,
with regards to Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden with regards to corruption. So, you know, both sides are throwing out allegations, you know, about Ukrainian corruption. And I got to tell you that when I look at everything, as far as this, you know, me, I look at four things. I look at circumstances, statements, facts, and forensic evidence as an investigator. And I'm not seeing that the allegations that the Democrats are making are credible. Okay.
And they're not sticking, and that's why they're on this hunt. But let's go back to this particular person, Marie Yovanovitch. When she went in to testify, you know, they're hunting around for everything, and really she had nothing to say. So there was nothing that came out of that. And here's the game that they play that should make every American mad. They will not release her transcript because she had nothing bad to say about Trump. Does she like Trump? No, not much. But she had nothing to say that was like some smoking gun that they're looking for, that type of thing. But they will not release her transcript. What they do is they leak little things out of the meeting to make it sound like she said something bad. But the Republicans that were in there said there was nothing. There was just nothing. I wish that they would release it. But the Democrats are in control, and they're manipulating all of the public sentiment by being dishonest.
Exactly. So, you know, the advice out there, you know, to our listeners is, look, don't get emotionally involved in this. Spend a couple of minutes and just, you know, Google some of the stories and see what the real facts and evidence are. Because if they do that, they'll pick up on something that I picked up on, and that's what Representative Scott Perry said. Of course,
right,
you know, he's a Republican, but he said, hey, look, I sat in on that testimony, and I asked some questions, and pretty much everything she said was either secondhand information, and she had no direct knowledge. So it's kind of, I think this, and I think that, and she really was disgruntled. She was perturbed that they pretty much forced her out of that position. And she says, well, I didn't do anything wrong. But you know what? That's your self-serving comment that you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't think you did anything wrong. But when in reality, she did what you said, Linda. First of all, she obstructed Trump's and Rudy Giuliani's investigation. Trump wanted an investigation on corruption in the Ukraine, and she had obstructed that, and she was bad-mouthing the president, and she was not in lockstep with where President Trump wanted to go, and the Secretary of State wanted to go with respect to
the Ukraine. And how would you feel as an employer if you had an employee going to your competitors or going to your customers and talking bad about you?
Talking bad about your company.
Yeah, so that can't happen, and everybody should understand that, and she should understand that.
Well, you know, the other thing I wanted to say, and we'll just conclude with that, but she's an at-will employee. It's not like, hey, you know, you're a union employee or you're protected. You come and work for the United States government and you're invited to take an ambassadorship. You're at will, okay? So just as long...
Well, you're at the pleasure of the president,
there you
really
go. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And once the president or Mike Pompeo is not pleased with your performance, they're going to ask you to leave.
Yeah, it's so
okay.
Long.
So you go out and you say, well, thank you very much. And you go out, and that's pretty much the end of it. Are you ready for a cup of coffee?
I am.
Let's do it. This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. Well, speaking of the media, how about that recent turnover at Fox News?
Well, you and I have talked about Shepard Smith before, and neither of us were a fan. I used to be a fan of his, actually, some years ago.
Really?
And he's been there for 23 years.
You know what? I was never a fan of his. And of all the time that Fox News is on 24/7, the only time that I make it a point not to watch Fox News is when Shepard Smith is doing the news. I got to be honest with you. I find him as an ideologue for the left. And I know that's why Fox has fair and balanced news. So you get what you get. When Shepard Smith is on in the afternoon, or was on in the afternoon, you know what you're going to get from him. But to me, he was just a pretty boy talking head. I never saw him as a journalist. I always saw him as a teleprompter reader. And every time he said something, it was always negative about the president, and he never gave him any credit for anything. And I just find that as being, you know, a confirmation, an implicit bias. And I don't think the news, if that's what you're portraying, you're on the afternoon news. And by the way, he was the head of the breaking news department. Okay, now if you want, now here's my feeling about this. I want to hear your thoughts. I don't have a problem with your opinion, Shepard. I don't have a problem with any of your opinions, because those are your opinions. But when you get on television during a news hour, and that's what's being represented, the Shepard Smith News Hour, and you, everything that comes out of your mouth is biased and against the President of the United States and his policies and where this country is going under the Trump administration, I've got a problem with it. I don't want biased news. Now, if they wanted to give Shepard Smith his own television show, you know, anytime in the 24-hour period on Fox News, hey, right on, more power to you. That way I know, just like with Sean Hannity, everything that's coming out of your mouth is going to be opinion and not necessarily news.
Exactly. And I became frustrated because...
So you agree with me?
Oh, absolutely. I became frustrated because it was very slanted, and there were things that I had already read about, studied about, and knew it to be a certain way, and the part that he only would bring out would be a different side. So everything in life has more than one side and more than one view in most cases, and he only would bring out one side, and I find that really frustrating because, again, what I dislike about the news is the attempt to manipulate America's minds to some particular end that these people want. Whatever that end is, that's what they want. Yeah, so, you know, there was a conference, which I wish I would have known about ahead of time, and it was on conservative schools or colleges.
It was a conference dealing with conservative universities in America.
Okay, so, which there probably weren't very many there. The conference, I would have loved to go.
Right. Oh, me? I would have loved to have gone. Because, you know, I think they said that out of all the professors in the United States, I mean, all through, at least in the survey they did, they found that only 38% of professors throughout the United States were conservative.
Oh,
everybody
think it's
else
way
was
less
liberal.
Than that,
well, it might be.
Okay, but what they teach that I love, Ron, is the complete opposite of what we're just talking about. They teach students how to think, not what to think. And this is the problem that we have with the media today. They are telling us day in and day out what to think. People need to know how to think and how to come to these decisions on their own. And you remember when we were in Hawaii and we were talking to this couple that we met there, and the woman that we met said, you know, I don't know what to think anymore because I don't know who to believe anymore. And we were able to have that conversation of, here's how you get the information you need to decide what is right and what is wrong, because you cannot just take these talking heads on any station, I don't care whether it's CNN or MSNBC or Fox or any of the stations, and just believe it. You need to do your own research.
And you know, and I agree with that. And I'm glad that you brought up, you know, because we like to think of ourselves as common sense conservatives. I mean, full disclosure, I don't think there's any secret about that. Anybody that knows you and me, but I like the fact that you and I are both independent thinkers, but we think alike. Okay, you're a very independent person. I'm a very independent person, but we come together without having any undue influence on each other. And when you and I, you know, have these great conversations at night, you've got your thoughts, and I don't try to manipulate you at all, and you do the same thing with me. I'm always asking you, so how do you feel about that? I'm very sincere. Well, the media does not do that. They, like, force feed you what to think, you know?
Right, and too many people, unfortunately,
they don't do their homework.
Yeah, they eat that food, if you want to put it that way, and they...
Or they drink that Kool-Aid.
Yeah, they drink the Kool-Aid, and they vote to... with those particular, you know, that portion of somebody else's information. So what I think is that just that America needs to really think about what they're voting for, because we get so tied up with the narrative instead of the facts. And the narrative is the big thing that the media is putting out, because they want you to do exactly that. And people don't have time. They understand that. They understand their audience very well.
Oh, no kidding. And you know me, I am off to say that you don't want to have an emotional response to something. You want to have a forensic response. In other words, a fact-finding response. The problem is the people don't do their due diligence. They don't do their homework. And in today's rapidly evolving news cycle, and with so much internet and you know, so many ways to get truthful information, if you just spend a couple of minutes and look at the real facts to things, you'll find that a lot of the stuff that's being portrayed, I mean, even in some of the conservative news venues that we watch, you know, it's wrong. It's slanted one way. It's biased one way. And I just want to give you an example, and I think I might have shared this with you, but, you know, a few weeks ago, I went back up to the San Francisco Bay Area, and I had my, you know, my high school reunion. And the people there, of course, they've lived in the Bay Area their whole lives, and, of course, I moved away a long time ago. But when I was talking with them, and I made it a point not to have political discussions, you know, because people know what I do for a living. And I didn't want to have a political discussion. I just wanted to meet my old friends and get together. And I didn't take the bait from anybody. But I listened. I was a good listener. And I would listen to the conversations that they were having with each other. And it was what I referred to when I left to myself was Bay Area speak. And it was all because of the people listening to the liberal news media in the very uber liberal San Francisco Bay Area. Right. And you can't say that you're not impacted by a continuous ingestion of liberal political propaganda.
Right. Well, speaking of political propaganda, Trump has had several of his rallies now. And, you know, I really enjoy watching his rallies. I think he's a hoot to watch.
Well, he's a hoot to watch. It becomes just like any other politician. It becomes a bit redundant.
Yeah,
but
he does have some
funny things that he says.
He does. And I like watching the people. I like watching their enthusiasm.
Me too.
Here's what I don't like. And, you know, I just find it despicable that, let's just take the first one that he did, which was Minnesota. And I love that he went into Minnesota, because so many people went to see him. He had 100,000 people that wanted tickets. He had 20,000 inside, 25,000 outside, a zillion red shirts.
And it's good to go into blue areas. It really is,
sure.
You know.
But then you have the people, the Soros type of people who are paid protesters to come out.
They're mercenary protesters.
Antifa comes out, and they have to cause trouble. So the first thing you have is you have, these people spitting in the face of Trump supporters. I mean, spitting in their face. You never see the reverse. You never see Republicans, conservatives doing this at Democratic events. It just didn't happen. So then they're starting fires. They're burning MAGA hats. Then they have to get more raucous, and they start wanting to fight with the police, and they want to fight with other people, and they want to, you know, break windows in police cars, and what the heck? And even the Minnesotans that were there that were not Trump fans, that were outside peacefully protesting, they resented this. They did not want these people there.
Now, you know, I'm gonna let you say that because I saw that too, and it's certainly a truism. But the thing that bothered me, Linda, is that there were other people there that were not the violent protesters, but they had masks over their face, and they were asking them, "What do you think about this violence? What do you think about this vandalism and all of this and this riotous behavior?" And the people were saying, "Well, I really don't have a problem with it."
Right.
Okay, but that's scary to me.
But those weren't the Minnesotan people, Ron. Those were the paid protesters.
Well,
I'm not so sure.
Truth be told, okay, I think that you're speculating on that, because we don't know.
So are you speculating?
No. I'm not speculating when I quote what the people are saying.
Oh, no, they said it, but we don't know if those were paid protesters or not.
Okay, now I agree with that. But is that, here's my bottom line. Is that not bothersome to you? Is that not the epitome of fascism? Is that not what we saw in the 30s and 40s,
yes,
okay, with Mussolini's black shirts and Adolf Hitler's brown shirts?
Yes.
Isn't that what we saw?
Yes, and this is what this faction, and I'm not saying the people in Minnesota that live there, I'm saying this faction of people who want to cause chaos are going to do this at every single one of Trump's events. Then he had a second event in Louisiana, and I have a couple. Well, I want to go back to Minnesota, and I want to talk about Louisiana real quick.
Sure.
But with Minnesota, one of the things that President Trump said that was very controversial was that Biden did nothing as a vice president except for that he learned how to kiss Obama's rear end, right?
Right. And I thought that was funny as hell.
I actually thought it was funny, because
you're not going to, you got to remember, he is a politician, but he's not. Okay, he's sort of like an everyday Joe, and he's a populist.
Well,
okay,
it's how people talk in their living rooms.
I know, but you know what? I like that because he's, may I say, down at my level.
Well, anyway, speaking of the media, on Fox News, the next day, Juan Williams comes on very seriously. He's the Democrat on the five.
Right.
And he says, "Oh my gosh, I'm just horrified. I think it's just so sad and so terrible that the president of the United States speaks this way. And what are our children learning? And look at these things he's saying about a former vice president. Oh my gosh." And I sat there with my mouth hanging open, and I wanted to yell at the TV and say, "Are you just kidding me, Juan? Look at what you guys have been saying about the president." Okay, not about the ex-vice president, about the president of the United States. I have never heard such vitriol and horrible things about a president except from the mouths of you Democrats. So how dare you say that you are so horrified that he said this when you guys accuse him of every vile act and you want to impeach him for another lie?
Well, you know, truth be told, I mean, I'm not a fan of Juan Williams, and I met Juan Williams during my work with Fox. And I'm telling you what, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and they kind of make him come off that way. But I've met the guy, right? And I know how he thinks, and I've heard him many, many times, and he never surprises me. Here's the takeaway for me. He made those comments about the president of the United States making what I would say is a flippant comment about Joe Biden kissing Obama's rear end. What did he not say? I was horrified by watching those protesters and those Antifa people and those anarchists and those anti-Trump people setting arson fires, breaking the windows of police cars, rocking the police cars, and spitting in the face of Trump supporters. Okay, that's to me what I wouldn't want my children to hear or see. But that didn't affect Juan Williams whatsoever because he's an ideologue.
Nor does it affect him when somebody like Robert De Niro says the horrible things that he says.
Exactly. But, you know, here's, again, another takeaway. You name one time where we've ever seen any of the Trump supporters at these rallies go nuts.
No, they
okay?
don't.
They don't go and spit in the face of other people. They don't roll over police cars. They don't break windows. They don't take on the police. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that, I'll tell you what, I'll say one more thing and I'll shut up. But I think when conservative and moderate and even libertarian people see how the progressive left and the anarchists and the fascists and Antifa are fascists, don't mix that word whatsoever, they're fascists, that gets Trump votes. That gets people angry, and it gets them votes.
Well, and then he did another rally in Louisiana. And first of all, I want to say something about Louisiana. The Louisiana kids won the World Series of Little League. And President Trump had them to the White House, which just is so cool, and gave them a tour of the Capitol and met with them and everything. And then on the way to his rally in Louisiana, he put that team on the Air Force One with him and took them home.
I got to tell you, that is one of the most amazing things that I've ever seen a president do with regards to kind of give back to the community or something like that.
Wow, what an adventure for those kids.
Being on Air Force One.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll tell you what, I saw Air Force One. I've seen it a couple of times on the tarmac, you know, from a long distance, and it gives me goosebumps. I can't even imagine what it would be like actually being on the aircraft.
Yeah, how neat is that?
Yeah.
So again, same type of thing in Louisiana, big rally, and you know, I'm just amazed after 3 years of him being president and all this nonsense going on. I mean, the crowds come out for him in droves.
Yeah. And the one thing that I liked is, remember, the mayor of Minneapolis denied the police officers an opportunity to wear their uniforms at the rally, and of course the union police union president went you know, nuts criticizing the mayor, and I think appropriately so. But I liked what they did because they Trump people made a whole bunch of red t-shirts that said cops for Trump. And when he was giving a speech, he made sure that there was like 80 of those guys behind him.
Yeah. Good for them.
And he was really good and very complimentary, thank God, to law enforcement and the first responders.
Well, and the police chief in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
He minced no words towards that mayor.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
Yep, so good for him.
Well, you ready for our last cup of coffee?
I am.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, so what are you drinking over there? I saw you with the whipped cream, and I heard the foam come out of it. What is
Yum.
That?
It is a caramel latte with whipped cream. Yum.
Oh, man, you're such a sissy. Drink it black, girl. Drink it black.
Well, that's how I drink my coffee every day.
Hey, how about the whistleblower? Okay, we're talking, we've talked a lot of politics tonight, but man, I got to hit that whistleblower thing. Another so-called made-up controversy.
Oh my gosh, it's so made up.
There's no there.
Okay, so now this person, guy, girl, whatever they are, does not want to come forward and testify as they said they would. Hi, Desi.
And woke up the dog.
And now they want to testify just by answering questions in writing. So, I mean, seriously. And then it comes out that this person was probably, most likely, worked with Biden in the Obama warehouse.
Warehouse. Imagine that.
So, I mean,
gambling, I say. Yeah. I'm shocked.
So seriously, I mean, what do you think the connections are here? This is just ridiculous.
Well, you know, the thing is, we have something called the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights says, under due process, that people have a legal right to face their accusers. So if we've got a whistleblower and they're making this big deal about this whistleblower, man or woman, then wouldn't you think that President Trump and his attorneys would have an opportunity to face the accuser, or even just before that? Hey, look, Democrats, you've made a big deal about this whistleblower and bringing this whistleblower forward. So let's get him or her in public out in front of the subcommittee. Okay, come on, let's get it done.
Well,
get
them out there. And they're not a true whistleblower, so they shouldn't be protected by the whistleblower protections, A.
Yes.
And B, he has a definite political connection to the person in question here, which is Biden. And it's not just that they made a big deal, Ron. They are trying to nullify 65 million votes of American citizens in this country.
I don't know how many times it's going to take, how many instances, how many circumstances, how many controversies, whatever, you know, language and rhetoric you want to use, whatever definition you want to use. I would love the American people to just look at this thing forensically for a minute and not emotionally and say, are you kidding me? Is this not yet another attempt at a bloodless coup to remove the president of the United States and, like you said, Linda, and destroy or nullify the votes of 65 million American citizens?
Well,
it's disgraceful.
It is. And you know, here's another example. Joe Arpaio. They did the same thing to Joe Arpaio in Arizona.
Exactly. And after he was basically knocked out of that election, what happened to all that controversy? If it was so serious, it all went away.
Well, and you know what else went away? All the good things he did for Arizona went away.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
His tent city with the guys in the pink underwear went away.
Yeah. But here's some interesting news, because former Sheriff Joe Arpaio has just announced that he's probably going to run for his sheriff's position again.
Not probably. He's doing it. He's running again.
And
he
it's Maricopa.
He's 87 years old.
I know. And I got to tell you what, when I get to be 87 years old, I hope I look half as good as Joe Arpaio, because I think he looks great for 87 years old.
I hope you do too.
And by the way, okay, so what county, Linda, here's a quiz. What county is Joe Arpaio running for?
You didn't think I'd know this, did you? Maricopa.
No, you're pretty smart. I did that. Anyway, and I'm going to give the guy a plug because I think it's SheriffArpaio.com. Is that what it? You could Google it. Okay.
Yeah,
you could
just Google it. That's wrong.
Okay. But
close.
I'm going to Google it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to send, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I think
run,
I'm
Joe, run.
Run, Joe, run. I think I'm going to send the guy $25. Okay. Do you remember?
That's pretty cheap.
Okay. So
you're pretty cheap. I don't know.
I am pretty cheap. Maybe more. Thanks for putting me on a spot. Hey, do you remember just a few years ago, we were at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda?
Yes.
And we went to see a Sheriff Joe speak. And
I think Larry Elder was there, a few
right.
other people, yeah.
Yeah, and Larry Elder was there. But there was so much stuff that I didn't even know about Sheriff Joe. I didn't know about his 30-year history as a big deal supervisor and manager at the DEA. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. What else about Sheriff Joe that was amazing? He is extremely well-spoken.
Oh, yeah.
He is extremely entertaining to listen to. He is extremely articulate. I was very blown away by him. I mean, not many people can do a speech like he did and just be so loose and so comfortable in his own skin and just entrance that whole crowd.
You know what? He never looked at one single note. There was no teleprompter. It was all off the cuff. And as an old law enforcement dog, I was just amazed at the history of this man in the law enforcement community. Just amazed of all of his accomplishments, all of his experience. So I don't care if he's 87 years old. I'd love to see
Sheriff
Joe.
He's better than anything else running against him, that's for sure.
Without a doubt. So anyway, so how about the issue of the acting director of Department of Homeland Security, Kevin McLennan, resigning from office?
Well, I honestly haven't stayed too much in touch with that. I felt that after he got heckled at one of his presentations.
Georgetown.
Yeah, that I really felt that he was very discouraged and that he might do that. I know that I had read before that he was discouraged in his job because he was not allowed to be over all the departments.
I think the term you used when we were talking earlier about this is that you said they sort of boxed him in.
Yeah, they gave him a kind of a short leash. And so I know that he was frustrated in that job. And I think that he left in a very classy way. He didn't badmouth anybody.
Right.
He simply said he wanted to spend more time with his family. I don't think that that's the reason that he left. I do think that he just wasn't happy there. And, so they'll have a new person in that position.
No, and I think it'll come out very, very shortly. And I think President Trump said nice things about him as well. And, it was very interesting, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but acting director, now former acting director, Kevin McLennan, he had a 30-year history in law enforcement, working with the feds. I mean, that's a long history.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, thank you so much for your service, and I'm so sorry that things didn't work out.
Yes.
And I hope that you'll either have a beautiful retirement or you'll find a job, an industry or something that resonates with you. Because
I'm sure you can find one in law enforcement.
You know what? He's a very talented guy.
People like that are rare, sure.
He's a very talented guy.
Yep. Well, I want to change it up and just tell you a couple other things that are of interest to me. You and I both being Catholic, you and I both having been to the Vatican.
On several occasions.
Yep. Which, by the way, I still, I would love to go back again because I think it is absolutely one of the most beautiful places you can visit as far as the artwork.
It's breathtaking.
There.
The artwork
it's
is
nothing
breathtaking.
Nothing like it I've ever seen. Nothing like
Correct.
It. Probably in the world anywhere,
right.
in that one place, which is just showcases the talent of that age. And I don't think that we even still have that talent today. I think that we lost some of it and it hasn't come back full bore yet.
Yeah, and again, full disclosure, Catholic Christian. I think we think of ourselves more. We were upraised as Catholics and went through that parochial school system with the Jesuits, the Penguins, if you remember.
Oh.
The Sisters of Notre Dame. The brutal, oppressive schools that we
went
on.
And you know what?
I'm thankful for the schools we went to.
I
learned a lot.
I thank my parents for putting me there because I got just the best education.
Oh, me too. I'm just kidding around. So. But, you know, even if you're not into Catholicism and you're not into and you don't like the politics of the Catholic Church, lay all that aside for a minute, right? And
the
for God's sakes, go to see the history and the phenomenal, breathtaking artwork that you see in the Vatican.
And it's not one type of artwork. It's not just painting.
Oh, no.
It's tapestries and it's statues and it's all different types of things. It's just amazing.
And would you agree with me? I mean, it's just larger than life. So let's talk about the canonization of five saints.
Right. So this year, the Catholic Church is going to be canonizing five new saints. And I just think that that's so interesting because, you know, to be a saint, there's some things that have to happen. You have to have a certain amount of certified miracles and those types of things. So I don't know a lot about the people. The one of the most prominent people that's going to be probably the most well-known that's going to be canonized as a saint is going to be Blessed John Henry Newman. And he was a convert from to Catholicism from Anglicanism.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to say. And he was a theologian, and he died in 1890. So he will be saint, whatever the name they give him, I guess. And then you have a Sister Mariam Theresia of India, who's the founder of the Congregation of the Sisters of the Holy Family, and she will be being canonized also. Another woman, Italian woman, Sister Giuseppina Vanini, she's the founder of the Daughters of St. Camillus, and she will be a saint. And another woman, what's up with all the women? They've got the rest of these are women.
Well, I know there was a Brazilian,
Brazilian
nun, right?
Sister Dulce Lopez Pontes of the Congregation of the Missionary Sisters of the Immaculate Conception of the Mother of God. I believe she's the first Brazilian.
Well, I want to tell you something about her because I do know a little bit about her.
Okay.
And I think her claim to fame is that she created a charity that remains after all these years to be one of the most popular charities that does the most for all the downtrodden in Brazil. We're not only talking people in poverty, but homeless people, people with mental health, women, you know, all sorts of people in Brazil who could really use a charity like this have benefited by her work. So I was very happy to see that Brazil got their first saint.
Yep. And the last one is another woman, Marguerite Bays of Switzerland, of the Third Order of St. Francis of Assisi. And, you know, I'm going to take the time to read up on what their miracles were and what their paths were, because in the world today, there's so much strife and so much trouble between people that for these people to rise above that and just, you know, give to other people and just be as religious and as, I guess, saintly as they were to end up being canonized. I want to know what that looks like.
Yeah, you know, just the whole idea of a lifelong
commitment
to give back, right? And the tremendous sacrifices and the adversity that these five people had to go through during their short time on earth and how much they were, you know, they managed to accomplish as religious people. So
yes,
You've got to give them credit for that. And the other thing which I find is always very interesting, and I really don't know how the entire protocol or process, but it takes years and years and years to go through the canonization process, you know, to go from first nomination all the way through being canonized as a saint in the Catholic Church. I just thought very, very interesting, and it's a good story to discuss.
Yeah, it is, and it's a happy story, and it's inspirational to me. You know, speaking of kind of happy, I was reading an article in Inc. magazine, and I really like Inc. magazine. I read it all the time. It's a good magazine. And I suppose that I get it because I never really subscribed to it, but because I've been in the Inc. 5000 a number of times, so I think it just comes to all of the people that are members of that unique club, Ronaldo.
So you're a pretty big deal, Linda. Okay.
But it's got some really good articles about people. It really talks about a lot of different subjects, not just business. But one of the things that it talked about that I found interesting was a story on wellness. And the story was written by Jessica Stillman, and she's a contributor for Inc. magazine. And the article was about the most important factor for wellness has nothing to do with food, exercise, or time management. So what do you think would account for that?
Okay, well, I would say something like have confidence in yourself, love yourself, believe in yourself, and that creates the wellness.
Well, and I'm sure that that has to do with it. What her research came up with, and I find it fascinating, kindness. So how this came out is that they were doing experiments on diet and food and things like that with rabbits years ago, and they gave some rabbits good kibble, and they gave other rabbits like really a bad diet for rabbits. And they wanted to test the effects on their heart and their wellness. Well, what they found was that what helped more than anything in the wellness of the rabbits was when the researchers picked them up and petted them and gave them love and affection. And then they started researching on people, and they find that people who have kindness shown to them in life are much better off than people that are not. The stress goes way down, which contributes to wellness. So yes, you have genetic factors, but that kindness is even a bigger factor than food, exercise, or time management.
Wow, that is a very interesting research project. Hey, I want to just switch it up because we're just about done for this evening. And you know, I've got a dear friend that I worked with, and his name is Mike Ross. And Mike retired as a lieutenant with the San Jose Police Department. And there are legends in the San Jose Police Department, like every other department, and I would consider Mike to be a legend. We sort of grew up in the department together. We didn't get to personally work in the patrol division together as partners, but he was always around, and I always admired the great police work that he did. But the one thing that I really like about Mike, and I have so much respect for, is Mike has always been a giver. Always been a giver and a sharer, and he is and unfortunately, Mike has got a reset of a serious medical problem, and I just wanted to take this opportunity, like many of my colleagues, and wish Mike all the best and fight and hang in there, and I'm saying prayers for you.
And I'll pray right there with you.
Well, are you ready to go to bed?
I am.
Great.